Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr, and you are listening to Fiber Talk, the twice-weekly podcast for needlework artists. Our artist this week from the Monsters Lounge, Teresa Lawson. Teresa, welcome.
Hello. Nice to meet you. Thanks for having me.
You too. Thanks for doing this. All right. For all the listeners, get the story about the Monsters Lounge out of the way, because that doesn't fit the usual needlework thing.
I know. Yeah, that was kind of I should have thought about it a little bit more, but I think I was looking around the room and deciding what was interesting and settled on my cat, Monster. And he lounges a lot, so, the Monster's Lounge, and there it was.
There we have it, right there.
I was looking for an interesting business name or something a little bit catchy, but...
It's different, yep.
Certainly is, yeah. It gets people talking.
Yeah, I love the cat name, though, Monster. Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was a monster. Very naughty.
Yeah, sometimes they are. All right, as a former educator, I was really irritated and surprised that when I read the high school counselor that said you didn't have the brains to make a living with embroidery. As a former educator, it's been a long time since I taught school, but you know the message is always encourage. You know, if somebody thinks they're interested in this, give them an opportunity to explore it, and to shut you down like that. But obviously, it didn't work. So,
yeah, it was the trouble is that the more people I tell about that, the more stories I hear about that, which is, you know, really disheartening. Yeah, a lot of people, careers have been off-railed by just one comment just like that. And, you know, you have to be really careful, especially if you're in that position and speaking to somebody in the formative years of their life about the things that you say to them. And like you say, it should be encouraging. It should be, okay, this is what you think would make you happy. Let's see how you can do that. And even if your grades are bad, like mine were, then okay, let's see how we can work around that. And what do you need to do to improve in order to get you to where you want to be, rather than, sorry, I don't think you're smart enough for that, so let's look at something else.
I just can't believe that, because yeah, it's all right. Well, then here's what the job looks like. Here's a couple of people in the community that you might talk to.
Exactly.
All those things that give you a chance to see if it really is what you want. And, And so many people start out thinking they're going to be one thing and they end up being something completely different. But then in your case, it worked out. Did that drive you? Did that always sit in the back of your head? Just kind of a chip on your shoulder kind of thing?
No, I wish I could say it did. What actually happened was I listened to her and I assumed that she was right because she was an adult figure, and so I stopped doing art. I looked into the administration, something that I thought that I could handle with the lack of smarts that I had, and so most of my career ended up being in either warehousing or administration. With art on the side, art was always a part of my life, always will be, but it was never a pursuit. It was more of like, this is what makes me happy, I'm going to do it on the side kind of a thing, which, yeah. A little bit. It was a formative moment in my life and a really disappointing one. And if I have a message for anyone that I speak to about, any young people that I speak to about making a career in art, yes, it can be difficult, but that doesn't mean that you shouldn't be pursuing it. Don't listen to people, listen to people, but take it as advice as opposed to, you know, this is what you have to do to be successful in life.
Right. So, that frustrates me to no end, because
to say
you don't have the brain power to do it, you know, we all learn in different ways. And obviously you're a visual person. And so, you know, maybe that's why your grades weren't so great, was because reading a book just didn't work for you. And, you know, it's so frustrating. Yeah, all those years, that, you know. So you kept art alive. Was there a point where you just said, this is what makes me happy, this is what I'm going to do?
Let's see. Yeah, so how did that work out? I remember I was working in the kind of charity sector, working with a lot of women who were experiencing homelessness at the time. And I had read in Seattle that they had planned on ending homelessness. And I was like, oh, I'd like to be a part of that. That sounds interesting. They didn't, obviously, they didn't manage to do that.
I was going to say,
But
how'd that go? Yeah.
yeah. But it did, it brought me to America where I met my husband. And so all the while I'm still making art, but I'm trying to find work in the in not the voluntary section, but in women experiencing some kind of homelessness crisis. And so I've done that. I found a position and everything's going, tickety-boo. But and then I read that Seattle has a really good art community, a really good art sphere. And so we were doing the circuit of all the different urban crafts fairs and all the interesting art and craft shows. And so we went to one in particular that had an artist called Rachel Austin, and she does a lot of mixed media painting. And I went to her booth and I was just like, oh, this is, because it wasn't like that kind of art that you traditionally see, which is just so intricate and beautiful and, it looks really realistic. It was more like kind of a naive style of art where she used a lot of maps and she used a lot of, a lot of different concepts in her art. And then I was like, this is really different. This looks achievable. This is something that I can do. And so I went home and was just inspired by that and started creating more and more. And then I slowly just started gravitating back to working with fibers because I'd always done that as a child. My grandmother was a knitter. My mother was always quilting. And so it just
Yeah.
became natural for me. Yeah.
Sure.
So, and then, yeah. And then it just kind of, organically grew from there and it became less of a hobby and more of a drive, a passion, and then it became a business.
Yeah, so that transition intrigues me because yeah, you can have it as something you do on the side in the evening and on weekends, but then to have that kind of inspiration and then start to say, "Wait a minute, I can do something with this." And then it starts to consume more time as you evolve. And do you reach a decision at some point where you say, "Wait a minute, I think I can do a business." And there's the story of stitching the house for your sister that
Yeah.
plays into that too.
No, it wasn't really okay, I'm just gonna start a business now. It was more like that organic movement. So my sister had moved across country and I was, what can I make for her that would mark this occasion? Because it was a huge move. She essentially just gave up her life to start elsewhere. And so she'd lived in her home that she was moving from for almost 20 years, and so
Oh.
I thought, well, let's memorialize, if you like, the house. And I created that. I had already started building a social media on Instagram, and I placed a picture of the portrait that I made for her on Instagram, and one of my the people that I had grown friends with saw it, and she was like, oh, can you make something like this for me? And I was like, okay, well, just maybe pay for some of the supplies and then I'll get that out to you. So I made that, and then after that other people saw that and I'm like, oh, well, can you also do that, something like that for me? And so it kind of, I was like, oh, okay, I can maybe make a little bit of, pocket money from this. And so it just kind of grew from there,
Okay.
that along, yeah, sorry.
Yeah. Well, that's got to be so hard for something like that, where you just made one for your sister, and then now somebody wants to pay you for it. How do you figure out how much to charge? Oh, that's a tough call. Yeah.
Yeah, I think a lot of people who start out as a business go through that, don't they? It's because you don't want to be a kind of a corporate greedy type of person, but you still have to pay for the skill that you're providing for somebody.
Right.
And it's a hard thing to get into your head that I deserve to be paid for what I'm doing. And
Yes. Yeah.
so, yeah, I started out like most artists do, not charging what I was worth, just saying, oh, okay, well, I'll do you a favor and just pay for supplies. And then it was just not sustainable. So I started increasing the rates slightly, not paying for my time as well as the supplies and everything that it's at.
Yeah, I had a flight attendant. I was stitching on a plane, flying back from Europe, and stitching. And she wanted to see what I was doing. And then, do you sell those things? And I said, people can't afford them, because if you do it by on an hourly basis, nobody can afford. Well, maybe 2% of the people can afford them, but it's such a tough call because the hours that go in, charge 20, 25 bucks an hour, and it's expensive piece.
That's why it's kind of important to kind of diversify what you're providing. So in my case, I provide a lot of patterns for people who want to do it themselves. Those are really affordable. I've obviously got the books which show you how to do the bigger pieces yourself, and I still take commissions, but as you say, those are the ones that take all of the hours, and they charge more.
The houses that you do so dimensional and textured, and there's so much to them where it would be really easy to just do satin stitch walls and make some windows and do it in the right color and call it good. But you go way beyond that. A lot of work it says to me a lot of work, a lot of trial and error to get the dimension and texture that you get out of those houses.
Yes, part of that was because when I was learning embroidery, I wanted to make use of as many stitches as I could. And so I started to see how, when I was working with them, some stitches would look a lot like certain aspects of buildings or homes or trees. So, like, for example, if you have stem stitch, it's kind of wiggly. And then if you use a certain type of fiber, it kind of looks a little rough. And so if you add a bunch of stem stitches all together in a patch, it kind of looks like a tree bark. So it was more of a case of what stitch will look like this part of the house, and that's kind of how the dimension developed in my pieces, along with a lot of padding.
Well, but you use it so effectively though. That's the thing is you really the padding just puts life into those things where so many times if somebody stitches a house, it's just this flat dead thing that that's a house, bravo for you. But you use the padding and you really get some texture and some lift to it. It's really nice. What's that like doing commission work? Is that, I mean, if a house, you go take a few pictures of the house and then you replicate it. But doing commission work just seems to me like a difficult thing because you see one thing and your client may see something else.
I think my clients come to me because they like my style, and so they have an idea of what they're going to get at the end of the day. I wouldn't find it really difficult. I quite enjoy it because you get to develop a relationship with the person that you're working for, and you get to hear about the stories of the home and why it's so important to them, and it's a joyful experience to work with someone like that. I don't know what it might be like to, work for, I don't know, a company or whatever, because then that personal aspect's taken away. But most of my clients have been just normal people who want to take a place that is special to them and show it off to the world.
Well, and doing it with needle and thread is such a unique way as opposed to,
Yeah.
It brings out a different look as opposed to paint or colored pencil or something like that.
It does, yeah, it does.
The do you still do houses for people,
I took
or is that?
a long break for a while because it was getting too much. In fact, that's part of the reason why I wrote Hand Stitch House, because I was getting a lot of orders for commissions, and there's only 24 hours in the day. And so I thought, well, perhaps if I write the book, then that will help people who obviously appreciate art to maybe do it themselves. And because home is such a personal thing to you, I thought that, well, if I just give them the tools, then that will make it more meaningful for them to create something like this for themselves. it had the opposite effect. I had more people saying, well, that's cool and all, and I'll probably do that eventually. Your book is really nice, and that, but I'd really rather you do it. So eventually I got to the point where I just was like, I can't. I need some time to just, you know, do nothing for a while. And so I took a break for about a year. I'm just now started taking commissions again. So I've got two more projects on the way. One that's a little bit different. It's not a house. It's more of a map. But, yeah, back at it.
Yeah, yeah. But I know what you mean about when you have a job and you have to deliver a product and the pressure of doing that. And there's, I'm sure there's not a hard and fast deadline, but there is kind of an unspoken deadline that people do want it done in their lifetime. That pressure for me, it kind of takes the fun out of it to a degree, and it makes it a job, a factory type thing. And I don't enjoy that kind of work. Yeah.
Yeah, and it can be the same thing day after day, and an embroidered house, it kind of comes all at once at the end of the project, and so you're just in the middle of the weeds just working stitch after stitch after stitch for a while. And so yeah, they take at least 6 weeks to do most of them, and so it can be a bit of a grind if you're really not feeling it.
That's just it. If you're not inspired, if you're just, it's like, oh, all right, I better work on that house tonight, I haven't done it in 2 days, I better.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Oh, I don't want to do this anymore. Yep, I know. Yeah.
Yeah. I love my poor hand.
Yep. I know what you mean. I know what you mean. So the house you do from time to time, but your other work is absolutely fascinating. You've really you've evolved that. Are you actively designing your other designs? Are you kits? How are you doing your business, I guess, is the real question.
It's funny you should say kits. I was just talking to my mother the other day, and she said, why don't you do kits? Kits would be really good for people. So that is something that I'm thinking about. You have to toss up whether the initial cost of putting kits together is going to be worth it. At the end of the day, how many sales are you going to make, and is that going to be worth it? But yes, I'm exploring other designs. Like I said, I have another commission, which is not a house, which is really, it's been an exploration of how to handle that. I'm still working on other patterns. I'm renewing some of the patterns that I've made before, so that previously they were just pieces of art that people could buy. Now I'm making them into patterns so that people can create them themselves. And, you know, I'm just still out there looking at inspiration, seeing what, you know, tweaks my interest.
Yeah. Yeah, well, yeah, people see your work and they're going to want to stitch it, so you might as well put patterns together. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
The ones that really caught my eye were these kind of triptych things where you use three hoops for, what was it, the dandelion and the tugboat. It's so creative to like the tugboat, to show the anchor using three hoops, and it's just really, 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 it's creative. I've never seen that done before.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I was exploring dimensions of things. I think one of the dandelion was just thought up when I went for a walk with my husband, and I was like, oh, dandelions live on three different planes. I was getting all woo in my, you know, younger years. three different planes, and they have like flying things, and they live on the earth, and then underneath you've got these giant roots. Isn't that interesting? And then I was like, oh, well, why don't we, you know, create something with that concept? And then, you know, tugboat comes along, paint can.
Yeah. No, it's just an interesting thing, and when you look at it, none of them are really big, time consuming pieces of art. But then put together, they tell a story. It's it's a nice thing. Yeah, is that I mean, you talk about kits. I got to believe that that's an easy kit to put together, in terms of.
Yeah, they don't take a whole lot of investment for people. So, you know, three-inch hoops, what does that cost? They're like $2 each. And then, you know, thread is fairly affordable still. And all you got to worry about is the linen, and then you got the pattern already. So,
right, yeah. No, they're very creative. Yeah.
Is that what you'd like to see then? Okay. You heard it here first.
Okay. All right. We'll look for that then. There was a comment you made somewhere in one, I think it was in one of the articles that someone wrote about you, comparing the old saw of women's work and needle art, you know, and art. And we've talked with several different designers about that whole thing. That is kind of irritating, where you know, needle and thread, all right, that's woman's work. There's no way it's art. And it is. It's absolutely art. And it frustrates me.
Yeah, if you think about the skill that goes behind embroidery and needlework in general, and the imagination that it takes to create something from scratch, it of course it's art. That's the definition of art, isn't it? Some inspiration and creating something from nothing and inspiring the imagination in people. So I don't know whether it's just the association that because a majority of women do it, then so therefore, you know, it's not, it can't have credence, but yeah, it is frustrating, like you say.
Yeah, oh, very much so, especially when you look at it in the history. The needlework used to be done by men almost exclusively, and then evolved over to women, probably because they had to hire women to get the job done. And as a very small minority in this world, you know, to me it's art. I don't care how you look at it. You know, it takes effort and skill and practice and. As with your houses, trial and error and figuring things out to make them look right. And that's art. That's not just sewing buttons on shirts. Sorry.
Yeah. Not there's anything wrong with that. And that in itself can be art in a way, isn't it? I've seen a lot of kind of artistic takes on shirts and clothing, just the way that some sewers are designing things these days. That in itself can be considered art.
Right. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Fashion design, you know, you see them walking on the catwalk in these crazy-looking outfits, and, you know, that's art.
Right. Oh, absolutely. Yeah, well, I mean, that's that whole world is nothing but clothing art. I mean, it's all it is. And, it frustrates me. So two books. You have the one on houses, and then you have, what is it, Hand-Stitched Oasis. Talk about so the house one was so people could do it themselves, and that backfired on you. talk about that book. What is in that book?
So the Hand Stitch House. That is it's basically a beginning to end guide of how to create the style of houses that I make. So it will start out talking about the supplies you need, some of the experience that might be helpful. It will talk about the design process. And then we get into the weeds of here are the stitches that you use. This is how you put the design together. And it's sectioned into three sections. First part, getting ready, designing. Second part is actually doing the stitching. And then the third part is finishing it off. So you have a beautiful piece that you're ready to go. It ended up being 200 pages because I didn't want to take anything out. So it's a very thorough guide of how to create a hand-stitched house.
Yeah. Okay, so you do that. People just want you to do the houses anyway. Then the hand stitch oasis. That's a different approach or a different type of art then.
Yeah, it kind of came about from Hand Stitch House because it was the Hand Stitch House book was already at 200 pages, and so I didn't have a chance to add things that I wanted to add around the house, like the natural aspect, you know, more onto trees, more into bushes, more into different types of scenes. And so I was approached by CNT Publishing asking whether they could publish Hand Stitch at House. And then I don't remember what happened there, but it eventually turned into, well, why don't we just create something entirely new? I've been wanting to work on more outdoor elements. Why don't we create an outdoor thing? And then it can kind of work hand in hand with Hand Stitched House.
Mm-hmm.
And so Hand Stitched Oasis was developed, and it's a guide to creating all kinds of natural scenes. It's similarly set up, but because it was working with a publisher, it's a little thinner.
That'll happen. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You enjoy that?
It costs money to print these books. The process, it was a little different. It was a lot easier because I had a whole team of people behind me, so I didn't have to do all of the, I had to do all the artwork, but I didn't have to do all of the editing. I didn't have to take all the pictures. I didn't have to put it all together. I didn't have to find a printer. So it was a lot easier that way, but you do lose a lot of control over what goes into the book. So things that might be important to you as the artist, your editor may say, oh, well, you know, is it really necessary to go over this again? Because the type of people who are buying it will probably already know that. And so it can be a little bit disheartening, I guess, the fact that it has to be edited down so it's reasonable. That's a reasonable price for people to pay.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it was a fun process. I really did enjoy it. And it turned out to be a beautiful book. So I'm proud of it.
Oh, that's good. Yeah. No, as a, as a 45 year magazine editor. Yeah. I know that end of the function. Yeah. A good editor will improve your product. Yes. And yeah, I know I've edited some articles where I'm sure the author wasn't real happy with the end result in terms of not having all of the extensive wording in there, but had to admit that in a paragraph we got what he said in two pages. We got the message across. So it's a kind of give and take there. Yeah. So the first book then, the houses, you did that all yourself?
Yeah, completely self-published. Yeah. It was quite an undertaking. I remember I finished it and I was like, never again. I'll never do this again.
Oh, that's a lot. Yeah, and I'm sure you sit down and you think, oh, I'll write this thing and I'll have a book. And then you realize all the other parts that go into it. It's like, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Initially, I had planned it to be just a little ebook that would, you know, be 5 pages long. And then it just kept growing and growing.
Oh.
Well, I should really add this. And they probably want to know that. And so,
yeah. Oh, boy. So where do people get these books? Through your website, or can we get them in all the usual places, or what?
Yes, you can go on my website. You can find Hand Stitch House in, I think, they're wholesaling in, I forget the place, Quarto, I think? I'm not sure. I'll add it, and then you can add it to the links if you feel like it. Stitch People, www.stitchpeople.com. You can find Hand Stitch House and you can find Hand Stitch Oasis either on my website or on CNT Publishing.
Okay. CNC, like C ampersand C?
Yep.
Publishing?
CNT.
Okay.
CNT. CNT for Terrence.
Got another idea for a book in the works or?
No. No. Not right now. No, I'll take a little break from that.
Yeah, yeah. They're an undertaking, but to have two of them, that's a good accomplishment, no doubt about it. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. So, what is your process when it comes to creating your art? Is it you work from photos, from drawings, a combination? How do you go about creating the pieces that you have?
Depends on the piece. The houses all come from photos. To get them as representative of the house as possible, then you have to kind of use the photo as the model. So I'll ask people, can you send me something as front facing as possible so that I'd be able to trace it onto the piece and then work from there. The other pieces just kind of come from my imagination or how I want it to appear. Like, I have some pumpkins that I made, and the 3D, they sit off of the fabric. And those, I really just wanted to capture, you know, the fun little aspects of pumpkins. And so they just developed from that. Yeah, it really depends on the piece or what I'm inspired by.
Yeah. So one of those artists that has ideas floating around in your head all the time.
Oh, yeah. You should see my Pinterest page. It's insane.
Oh, that's where you collect your ideas, is Pinterest?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I've got about 5,000 boards and 16 million pins.
So. Oh, my. Yeah. Is it, how do you sort through all that in terms of what are you going to do next? Just how it feels that at the moment?
Usually just what I'm excited about is what I'll pursue, because that will give me the gumption to keep going rather than, oh, I've got to do this because this is the only thing that will sell. It's something, if I feel like, if I'm passionate about it, other people will be passionate about it too. And so, you know, I progress with that.
Yeah. Well, that, you know, and that's kind of the question from an artist perspective. Do I do what inspires me or what I think will sell? And
yeah.
That's kind of an interesting call. I mean, artists of all kinds have to deal with that at some point. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's too bad because it gives you kind of an icky feeling that you have to consider the fact that, oh, you know, I need to make an income, so what are people going to buy? But at the same time, it's like, is that really what being an artist is, you
right.
know, just now?
Right. Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, that's, of course, in the music industry, you know, that's the classic question. Is that some band will get started and they're doing music the way they want to, and they'll trip over one that becomes a popular piece of music, but it's not really what they do, and then the pressure to do more of that. Well, that's not what we do, but it made us money, so now what do we do? Yeah.
Mm. So. Yeah, and that's all people want to hear from then on, and so
yeah
I think play that's that how one burnout song. Happens, isn't it?
Yeah. Yep. No, that's a tough call. Yeah. And I think in the end, every artist just decides to stay true to themselves and just let it be what it can.
I hope so. Yeah. I mean, like I said, I feel like if you're passionate about something, it comes through in your work, and other people will be as well. They'll be inspired by it to make their own. And so.
Yeah. So where is the Monsters Lounge then, is a full-time, are you, a full-time job for all intents and purposes?
I wish. No, okay. It's more of a part-time thing.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm working at a large online realtor right now, part-time, and then the art is the other half of my work.
Okay. So you are able to devote chunks of the day then to your art?
Yeah, yeah. Large chunks.
Oh, that's good.
All the
that's
day.
Good. Yeah. And then, obviously, thanks to your mom, we're going to have kits coming up next week. Thanks, Mom. But where is that headed? Are you looking to create designs and sell more of those, to teach classes online? What is in your future?
The kits is definitely something that I'm looking into. I need to figure out how to pay for that, essentially.
Yeah.
Teaching, I'm not really sure. I do it off and on, but it's not something that it's usually just something that's requested, and then I'll do it to help people out, as opposed to something that I'm a regular provider for. I wouldn't mind teaching a bit more. It's fun, especially when you get a group of really fun people to, you know, work together and teach them, watch them get excited about the projects that they're creating. But it's not something that I have planned at the moment, but perhaps in the future.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. If you enjoy it, it can be rewarding. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, Teresa, thank you so much. And, we got two books, so we got plenty of projects we can get out of those. And kits coming up, and your mom will be there to help ship them, package.
Oh,
and
yeah,
ship.
Yeah, she better be.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and you know, Mom, you buy the inventory, for these kits.
There you
See?
Go.
See?
Figure it out.
Nice. Yeah, invest. If you want kits, Mom, invest. Yes.
Yes. Yeah. She's retired now. She's got plenty of time.
Yeah, yeah. And store them. And she can store all the right.
Oh, she'd love that. Yes. Garage packed with.
Yeah. See, that's the other part. Supplies. You gotta have some place to put the boxes. So make her think twice next time she asks, you know. All right, Teresa, themonsterslounge.com is the website, and thanks for doing this. I appreciate it.
No problem. It was really good speaking to you.
Thank you. And thanks to everyone for listening.